Was it something we said?
Are you talking to me?
Do you have a comment to make?
Are you talking to me?
Or a bone to pick with us? Why not send us an email to feedback@midwestpeaceprocess.com or join our forum at forum.midwestpeaceprocess.com, or you can just leave us a comment on our Facebook page, facebook.com/midwestpeace, or follow us on Twitter @midwestpeace. So that's how to contact us. Now let's give you something to contact us about. This week we get our libertarian on. Welcome to the Midwest Peace Process.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I have the pleasure to present to you now.
I
have the pleasure to present to you
the Midwest Peace Process.
The world is very different now.
The Midwest Peace
To remind
process.
America of the fierce urgency of now. Now.
Welcome to episode 42. The kids call it the process. Today is September 13th, 2012. I'm Jerry.
I'm Jeremy.
And this is Rob.
They say all politics is local, and this week we shift our focus to something a little more local. We have as our guest this week a real live gubernatorial candidate. I just wanted to say gubernatorial. Against Democratic incumbent Jay Nixon, the Libertarian Party candidate Jim Higgins. Welcome to the show, Jim.
Thanks for having me.
So I feel so grown up.
I know. This is exciting. We have like a real guest.
It's like we've gotten past adolescence, or we're still there. Got our first job.
Right.
A little nervous.
Hopefully you're not nervous talking to us, Jim. You have nothing to be.
I'm getting less nervous all the time.
Okay.
Wise.
So feel free to introduce yourself if you want to say a few words about yourself and your candidacy.
Okay. I've been a libertarian for a long time, and I was active in Missouri Party back in 92 when we got ballot status. We had to petition to get ballot status, and then we needed 2% to stay on the ballot. And we've stayed on the ballot, you know, ever since 92, so that's 20 years, so we kind of think that's good. One of my buddies called me up and asked me if I wanted to run for governor, and he asked LaDonna if she wanted to run for lieutenant governor, and she's decided not to. So I'm running for governor and against Jay Nixon and David Spence, and try to, you know, present the, you know, both of them. Well, Nixon is kind of a moderate, and David Spence, we don't know too much about him. He's a businessman, but I'm trying to present the libertarian perspective here in our campaign.
I wonder when I'm going to get my call to run for the Democratic Party. Is that how it works? You just get a call? That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
If they have a vacancy, in a lot of state rep races in Missouri, they only have one party running. In a heavy Democratic area or in a heavy Republican, they don't try. The other party doesn't try. So you could run if you wanted to.
I might do that. My name looks good on a sign.
I would vote for you, Rob.
I would vote for you in a primary election, Rob.
If I vote. Okay, well, we have a few questions prepared for the candidate. So I guess I'll kick this off here with the first one. I'll provide a link in the show notes to this, but a recent poll showed you with only 5%. So my question is, what do you say to people who claim that voting for you is a wasted vote?
Well, we have to change. Something's got to – we can't keep going like we are going. you know, the Democrats, we just keep expanding government, and it's not getting the job done. It's not working. The economy keeps going, sliding downhill. And the Republicans make a lot of nice speeches about cutting back government, but whenever they get the chance, they don't. You know, in Missouri, in both the Missouri State House and the Missouri State Senate, the Republicans have overwhelming majorities, so they could submit whatever budget they wanted to Jay Nixon. So you would expect, after all this Republican talk about cutting government, you would think that they would submit a budget that was less than last year. But no, they didn't do that. It was 4%. I think it was $23 billion in 2012, and now it's $24 billion. You know, that's a rise in 4%, better than inflation, and so that's growing government. So they, you know, the Republicans just aren't getting the job done. So, you know, voting for them doesn't mean anything. Maybe your guy will win, but what does that mean? It doesn't mean anything. So yeah, if you want real change, you have to vote for a Libertarian.
So you're saying the people who continue voting for the traditional two parties are actually wasting their vote?
Yeah, you're just going to keep perpetuating things the way they are, and it's not working.
Yeah. Well, I'll confess that I certainly agree with that.
Okay, good.
And our listeners will know that I'm with you on that. So, yeah, right.
I mean, I feel like as if you're just a hardcore Democrat person, then I wouldn't feel like you're wasting your vote on a Democrat. But I do feel like it must be frustrating that a lot of the GOP or standard Republican sort of talking points seem to co-opt the best of a Libertarian message without really following through on it. You know, the Democrats are just not your people. They're just. Kind of on the other side of the argument, but it seems like the Republicans are more like almost stealing your best ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I actually have more respect for the Democrats. You know, they'll tell you up front what they want to do, and when they get elected, they do it. So, but you know, that's what they need. That's what should be done.
Right. Yeah. I'll buy that. I like that.
You mean state, certainly not president, for the saying what they're going to do and then actually doing it.
That's not true. Oh, Jeremy.
Well, that's a good question, Jim. Were you referring to state politics specifically, or just the two parties in general?
Oh, yeah, just in general.
Okay, I think Jeremy probably takes issue with that.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Rob. I don't understand why you would disagree with what I said, Rob, regarding the president.
Well, because as your resident liberal, who's going to be a little more centrist tonight, I guess. I feel the Democrats are kind of believe in the things that they're campaigning for. And I think they try to execute those plans. I think where you fault Democrats is that their plans don't work very well. But I think they believe in the campaigns they're running. I think they really
believe in Santa Claus, but that didn't make it, you know, that doesn't real.
Right, but you got to respect Santa Claus, right? He's ho ho ho. He's jelly, red nose.
I just don't get it. That's not sure.
I think
where
we're talking about
discussion.
We were talking about co-opting how the Republicans tend to co-opt the Libertarians' best ideas. And that's what I was saying is the difference there. Anyway, okay. Me and Jeremy get into these little tiffs. It's part of the podcast.
Okay, I have another question for you, Jim. I checked out your platform on your website, and I'll include a link to that in the show notes as well so our listeners can look at it.
Okay.
I only found a couple of points that I disagree with you on. One specifically stood out, your stance on I-70 tolls So what's wrong with toll roads, in your opinion?
Yeah, libertarians in general are, you know, for fee-for-service types of things, so that would kind of imply toll roads. But what they're planning to do for I-70, they want to expand the three lanes and redo all the intersections and make them, make them bigger and better. And it just sounds like to me, and they're going to turn it over to private contractors. It just sounds to me like a big boondock.
So you're not objecting to the idea of a toll road. You just think it would be a way for the government to mess up something that's not so bad as it is.
Yeah, I think the bill was introduced by a Republican. I know it was. I don't know what his name. I can't remember his name now. But yeah, it's just these contractors. It's we have this big controversy about lobbyists and with the revolving door that legislatures become lobbyists and everything. So the contractors, lobby the legislatures, and then in return they get all these great big contracts, and I think that's what's going on here.
Yeah.
If that's what's going on, then certainly that's not the way to go about it. And I didn't realize they were talking about turning that over to a private company as far as handling the tolls. I would be in favor of expanding Highway 70 at least between here and maybe as far as Columbia. If you've driven that stretch, that's a very busy stretch. Even in off hours, I don't know beyond Columbia all the way to Kansas City. I haven't traveled on that portion of it, but I would be in favor of widening it, adding one lane at least. But I haven't seen this plan that you're talking about.
Yeah, it came up last year. It came up in the session earlier in the year, and then it sort of died out. So but it'll probably come back next year.
Okay, Jeremy, got a question for?
I had one. It's a pretty general question. Aside from the big things that are affecting everybody right now, jobs, housing, gas prices, what is going on in Missouri that you see as something you want to address, or one of the biggest issues in Missouri?
Well, you have the whole issue of the schools. Schools make up, like I said, the budget was $24 billion. Schools make up about 25% of that. But I think one of the biggest issues I'm concerned about is the abuse of eminent domain for these local communities. I mean, I can see a point for eminent domain for like highways where you have where you need to have continuous right of way and stuff, but a lot of these cities, just simply because they want to increase their tax base, they blight out whole neighborhoods and put in a Walmart or put in a strip mall and blight out whole neighborhoods and basically kick people out, confiscate their property. They're supposed to pay market prices, but they don't. And I think there's just too much abuse of eminent domain on the part of cities, and that sort of irks me quite a bit.
So there are two pieces of that I would ask. Do you see this as another case of private contractors lobbying the government for a development, much like you mentioned in the highway, the 70 I-70 highway expansion? And two, what were your feelings when Lambert took out the neighborhood or neighborhoods in Bridgeton to put in the new runway?
Yeah, I think on the first point, I think you're right, is that the contractors have a big influence over the cities. again, there's a lot of collusion between the contractors and the lobbyists and the legislature, and you know, it just there's just too much shady stuff going on, as far as I'm concerned. And then on Lambert, yeah, that goes back a ways, but there was a lot of different ways they could have done that, and the whole thing was just a mess. The way they bought up the properties, they they bought up some properties and not others, and left some homeowners kind of hanging in limbo, and you know, their property values went down, and they couldn't do anything about it. And then you know, the runway basically is not being used. That's the sad part.
Right.
As soon as they built this thing,
it was shortly before 9/11.
Yeah, it was shortly before 9/11. And what was that? Who had the home?
Yeah, they spent $1 billion on that runway, and it still doesn't serve the purpose it was originally intended to serve, which was supposed to be an all weather runway.
Right.
Right.
And even beyond what happened after 9/11, it's more than based on the economy that it's not being used. It's not functional as far as efficiency.
Yeah, there was a whole bunch of problems with it, and I think there was some safety studies done with it that, you know, the pilots didn't like it because there was a lot of safety issues with it, and it was a mess.
Somebody else can jump in if they want, but you mentioned the 25% of the budget going to schooling, and on your platform here on your website, you talk about diversity of curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
I read that Jay Nixon passed a bill trying to make it easier for Missourians to attain a college education, or at least that's how the bill was sold, and it was to create a core curriculum for undergrads that could be transferable, the courses could be transferable between all the public institutions in Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to go kind of fly in the face of your curriculum diversity, although you do specify K-12 in here. Do you have any opinions on that bill that Governor Nixon passed, or signed into law, I should say?
I'm not sure about – I don't really – not opposed to too much with what he was talking about, but on the K-12, you know, schooling, you know, they get a lot of, we give a lot of state funds through this formula with a lot of strings attached. So we need to have, I think what we need in education, we need a little more flexibility and let these schools, more charter schools, which Nixon is kind of pushing too, but more charter schools and more vouchers for parents, and give more decision making to the parents. Let them decide, you know, what kind of schools they want to send their children through. And we don't need to have everybody jump through the same hoops. You know, K-12. Everybody in the city, in the rural areas, every community has different needs, and so. We need to have a lot of different schools and try a lot of different things, and that way we can find out what works. You know, right now they get handed down what their curriculum is, and really, is that the best way? Nobody knows. So we need to try a lot of different things.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think you let the free market loose on education and let it solve some of those problems.
Jerry.
I know, Rob's coming up here. We talk about education quite a bit on this show, so it's you know, it's a topic that we all have strong opinions on.
So what do you think of the record of charter schools so far? I know it seems to me that there's been kind of a mixed record, but I may be fooled in that regard.
A record of what?
How charter schools have done, say, in St. Louis.
In the free, you know, in a free market, you're going to have a lot of people trying different things, just like on computers or cars. some of them are going to fail and some of them are going to succeed. And, you know, right now, you know, everybody, you know, we get dictated what's going to happen, but there's no innovation. So, you know, if when you try different things, you'll get innovation. But yeah, some of the charter schools aren't going to work. And so, but that's, you know, that comes with the territory. You know, you have to accept a certain amount of failures in order to keep making progress, you know, having others make progress. So
would you give the same leeway to the public school system as a whole? Just say, well, you know, some will do real well, some won't do so well, and we'll just have to keep moving forward. Does the same argument apply to a fully public system? Or the system we have now, which is not fully public, but you know what I mean.
Are you talking about having the state subsidize the schooling? I don't. Yeah. I guess as a first step, this is what we would do: is, you know, kind of loosen up on the mandates and stuff, and then eventually down the road, yeah, we need to cut back on school funding. You know, sending all your tax dollars to Jeff City, and then having an army of paying for an army of bureaucrats to handle all this money, and then ship it back to the local communities is very inefficient. It's costs a lot, but that's, you know, that's sort of down the road, but eventually that's where we want to go, is kind of cut back. And, you know, people, you know, right now, every citizen has to subsidize, the education of children. And so you're subsidizing families. Well, just in principle, that's not right. I mean, if you're retired and you've already sent your children through school, you shouldn't have to pay to send other people's kids through school, but that's down the road. The first thing we have to do is expand on the innovation and competition.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I mean, it sounds like for you, education's more like a service that you purchase, whether it's your kid's soccer team or a product you'd buy at a store. It's just a person to come and clean your house. It's a service that you purchase on the free market, and you choose whatever is best for you.
Yeah, that's right. You know, if you put the decisions back in the hands of parents, they'll get involved. You know, the teachers and the school administrators now complain, well, parents don't get involved. Well, they don't get involved because they don't have any real choices. So if they had, were spending their own money and actually could decide on what type of school that they're or what type of education their children could have, they'd get involved. That's for sure.
Rob, you said that almost like that is a foreign concept, but that's how post-secondary education in the United States works. That's exactly where it is. You pick a college and you pay for it. And we have one of the greatest university systems in the world. People come from all over the world to go here. They don't necessarily come here to go to our primary or secondary schools, but colleges, universities, yes. So do you feel that wouldn't work? I'm not saying it would be easy, because paying for college is certainly no simple task. But the concept is
as far as the colleges, I think one reason why the colleges are so successful, especially the big ones, is because of the public subsidy that goes with them for the research dollars and so forth. TV contract for football. That's right. You got it. I think if I really wanted to put my liberal hat on, it's already on. Is I think what I probably fundamentally am hesitant about what kind of Jim and your guys' approach to this is just how I see what the role of a private enterprise is. And I think the role of a private enterprise is to make money for the private enterprise. That's its main purpose. Now, sometimes that can be done by creating a quality product and marketing that quality product to your consumers in such a way that people know that that's where the quality is and they'll be willing to pay for it. But I think we can find all kinds of examples of successful private enterprises that make a good amount of money by intentionally putting out an inferior product and maybe marketing it better, maybe attacking the other competition better, maybe putting out
Are
a better ad
campaign.
Are you
attacking the American auto industry?
Yes. So I'm struggling to apply that to an idea of second grade education. That's kind of my hang up there. Go ahead, Jim. Tear it up.
Okay, let's see. Maybe I need some examples of where they make money that's sort of a misconception where they make money by somehow cheapening the product or anything. I don't think that in a pure free market, I don't think that's going to happen. They might get away with it for a little while, but eventually somebody will come along and say, eventually they'll get found out, and consumers are very fickle and they're very savvy. And they won't put up with that for very long. They'll find a quality product at a quality price. So they might be able to, you know, cheat the consumer for a little while, but in a free market, I don't think they'll get away with it very long.
I should really put my ideas to the test. I should start my own charter school. See if I can get rich with my cruddy instruction.
Oh, okay. Well, you start off with some good PR agent, I guess.
Right. Yeah. And I was thinking of this article my Republican brother sent me, and he sent it to me in all honesty as something to kind of cherish about a charter school movement. And it was something about New York. It was in New York City, and they opened it up to some charter schools and how they were involving parents more. And these parents were talking about all of this outreach they were getting from the schools trying to lure them in, just as a free market kind of works. You know, they spent it. But as you read the article and the things they're talking about, well, they spent a lot of money on pamphlets and shiny ads and telephone calls and other tools in order to get customers. McDonald's pays a lot of money for commercials, probably a lot more than they pay to make Big Macs. And so the idea of an idea like a McDonald's or a school is not to create the world's best hamburger. It's to create the hamburger that the most people will buy for the price that makes you the most money. You know, they don't have an altruistic goal to make the world's best hamburger. They have a goal to make money. Good for them. I think that's what McDonald's should do, but I don't believe that's what a school should do.
In a way, that's true. Maybe they need to provide a cheap education to a lot of people, and maybe then they'll provide a service that way. You know, and these schools are all struggling with money and stuff. You know, the state schools now. They actually rate the education by how much money they spend on the students. Well, right. That's not the way you evaluate a quality education. You evaluate it by how well they perform or how much they learn.
Right.
So maybe we'll get a better bang for our buck if they mass produce a cheap education. I don't know.
Well, incidentally, Rob, the McDonald's scenario you painted about schools, that's what public schools are. They're not giving the greatest education, like, oh my gosh, everybody is getting the best education ever. They're getting a basic education for the most people.
But I think that's what their goal is. Their goal in life is to try to provide the best education. I'm not saying they're doing a great job of it, but I'm saying that's what the purpose is.
I don't think that's what the purpose is.
What is the purpose? What's the purpose of my local elementary school?
Before, we've talked about the difference between schooling and educating.
Right, sure.
The purpose is the schooling of all of the children within their district.
Sure, right. Okay. And hopefully to do the best job they can.
Hopefully, but that's not the...
What's the purpose of Taco Bell?
To sell as many tacos as they can. Right. And burritos.
Right, or whatever. Doesn't really matter what this to sell.
Well,
I see those two things as being different, having different motivations, and that's what the hang up for me is.
But you seem to indicate that you think the school has this dream of providing the best education ever. They're not even close to that. And that's not a knock on the school, that's a knock on the system. That's not what it's designed to do. And for you to say that yes, that's what they believe they're trying to do, I think you're misrepresenting. I think you're dreaming.
So, Jim, the Libertarian Party just celebrated its 40th anniversary last year.
That's right, yes.
Yeah, so my question is, why hasn't it been able to gain more traction? And I guess I'm referring more kind of nationally rather than within Missouri, because as you said at the top of the show, you've done pretty well over the last 20 years in Missouri. Why hasn't that been the case in every state?
That's a question we ask ourselves a lot.
Yeah.
LaDonna and I went to the national convention in the spring. Was it in the spring, I guess. And, I've been active in the party a long time, and it's been a while since I was at a national convention, and I saw not a lot of people, but there's several people that have, been working on this thing for 40 years.
Right.
We just simply believe in what we're doing, that it needs to be done. But I don't know why, other parties have come and gone. We had Ross Perot come in, flash in the pan. The only thing I can say is, we're still here. The Green Party kind of had a peak with Ralph Nader, and they're still around, but they're every year, every presidential year, they seem to be on less and on the ballots of less and less states. We have experienced a steady growth. It's very slow, but steady, and I don't know. I don't know what it takes. Maybe.
Can I say something?
Oh, okay. My wife has a thought that she wants to express here.
Well, I think the reason that we haven't moved forward as much as we'd like to is because so many states have very restrictive ballot access laws, and we spend probably millions of dollars every election cycle just getting on the ballot. Mm-hmm. And this is a no-brainer for the Republicans and the Democrats because they write the rules.
Right.
And they write the rules to make it difficult for anybody else to get on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're doing is spending all our time and resources just getting on the ballot. Now, in Missouri, we're lucky. We've got ballot access. But in so many states where it's extremely difficult to get on the ballot, we'll spend hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
Like New York State, North Carolina, some of the Oklahoma.
Oklahoma, yeah.
And then once we get on the ballot, there are political parties that try to throw us off because of some detail that we didn't.
Yeah, that's a good point. We're just kind of beat up just to get to the starting line.
Yeah. Ron Paul just had an essay that I read this past week where he was kind of bemoaning the fact that taxpayer money goes to finance the big conventions for the Republican and Democratic parties, and that they were each given over $18 million to pay for those events, and that third parties are more or less shut out because, the requirement to get that funding, you have to have had at least 5% of the vote in the last, presidential election cycle.
Right.
And, I don't know that that's ever happened, has it? I mean, has the Libertarian Party ever gotten federal funding for their convention?
No, I don't think so. I don't think we have. I think there would be a lot of libertarians actually opposed to accepting it, but I'm not sure as a party, I'm not sure what they would do if they had a, you know, if it was available to them.
Right.
I'm not sure what they would do, but so yeah, they, you know, they're in charge and they make the rules and they make the rules in their favor. But, you know, I think outside of that, it just takes a long time. You know, we're making permanent change here. We're changing the way people fundamentally think. It just takes a long time to change public opinion like that.
Right.
Maybe that's a good thing. You know, you don't want public opinion to just go off on any harebrained idea. You know, so, you know, it has to be a tried and true idea before they accept it. But, God darn, I'm getting a little tired of it.
Yeah.
Well, it's speaking of Ron Paul, I think I heard this correctly, that the Republican Party was rewriting some of its own rules to close loopholes that were allowing Ron Paul's supporters to do what they did as far as gathering delegates and essentially using the system the way it was meant to be used to get somebody, to get a candidate in who people really supported, not just the guy with the money behind him. I thought it was funny that they were trying to close their own loopholes.
In states where there's primaries, maybe not so bad, but in states like Missouri and Iowa where they have caucuses, you can pull all kinds of shenanigans, and you know, there was all kinds of games that they were playing, I guess, to be nice about it, which was kind of keeping Ron Paul supporters away. So yeah, Ron Paul had an uphill battle. He had to fight the Republican establishment a lot. So, and more power to him. He, you know, made a lot of, had a big impact despite of all that.
Yeah.
How do you think that the Citizens United and the kind of the rise of the super PAC has affected parties like yours, or has it at all? Maybe that's what you need, a huge super PAC.
Yeah, we should. We have a super PAC, but I'm not sure if it would fall under the it's technically... The title is called a super PAC. I don't know if it would qualify. I mean, you know, several hundred thousand dollars.
So more of a PAC.
Yeah, more of sort of a regular size PAC. You
know? Right.
Extra medium, they call that.
Hey, Jim, we certainly appreciate you taking your time to talk to us. Do you have any closing remarks you'd like to make?
I'm just optimistic. You said, you know, you wondered what kind of progress we're making, but we're kind of optimistic for this year. We have a two-term former governor, Gary Johnson, for president. You know, we're optimistic this year, I guess we really won't find out until election day.
That's true.
Yep. So yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on, and I enjoyed everything. So
great.
And then can I mention my website?
Absolutely.
lpmo4gov.com.
Okay.
Libertarian Party Missouri for governor.com.
All right. We will have a link to that in the show notes. All right. Well, thanks again, Jim.
Thanks, Jim.
Your time.
Nice. All right, thanks. All right, talk to you later.
All right, bye. All right, we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will wrap things up.
Hush-a-bye, my baby. Slumber time is coming soon. Rest your head on Mammy's breast while Daddy hums a tune. All the old folks were humming, banjos were strumming, and the soft breezes sigh, as in days long gone by. Oh, way down in Missouri, where I heard this melody, When I was a little fellow on my mammy's knee, the old folks were humming, banjos were strumming, so sweet and low. Hush-a-bye, my baby, go to sleep on daddy's knee.
Okay, we are back, and we certainly enjoyed talking to candidate Higgins.
He's got my vote.
We wish him well. And I'm also going to put a link here to Gary Johnson's website so our listeners can check him out. He's the Libertarian candidate for president.
I think I just changed my vote.
Jeremy's a closet Libertarian.
Oh, yeah.
Not so closet Libertarian.
Right.
And Jim Higgins definitely got my vote tonight. Just I've never voted for a guy I actually knew. I'm going to claim I know this guy now.
That's racist, Rob.
Come on. All these libertarians are the same. But yeah, if I'm a Democrat, what, Jay Nixon or this Jim Higgins guy? Come on, Jim's got it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I hope the podcast army is with me and will also vote for Jim.
That's right.
More of a platoon than an army, I think. Yes.
The process nation. Okay, we got a couple of stories here to talk about. Got links in the reading room for the listeners to check them out. First off, there was this story a few weeks back about a shooting, police gunning this guy down in broad daylight on the side of the street in Michigan. I don't know if you heard about this at all, but somebody captured cell phone video of the whole thing, and it's on CNN. I got a link to this. Headline is, Police Won't Face Criminal Charges in Michigan Death. Okay, so watch this video. There's absolutely no question that this was an execution out in the middle of morning.
Broad daylight?
Yeah, just on the side of the road. And this guy's standing there. He's holding a knife, and I guess he was talking in a threatening way. But he's at least 20, maybe 30 feet away from the cops. And I just wanted to read this quote here from the CNN story. Thomas said six of the eight police officers opened fire as Hall approached. The officers had been equipped with stun guns, though they, quote, aren't 100% effective, he added.
So how about you have six guys shooting stun guns and two guys standing by with firearms?
The officers fired 46 rounds, striking Hall 11 times.
That's kind of alarming in and of itself for two reasons, I think.
Then it goes on to say, if there is any benefit to come from Milton's tragic death, we would hope that it would be to raise awareness of the challenges confronting the Saginaw Police Department and Saginaw elected officials. Challenges are serious, systemic, wide-ranging, and deeply rooted.
That is...
I don't understand what that means.
That is shockingly callous. And
yeah, I mean, it's like, okay, we killed this guy to, you know, bring everyone's attention to the fact that there are problems here in Saginaw.
Wow.
We just murdered this guy on the side of the road so that everybody knew. Yeah, it's just crazy. And, I mean, the officers have been equipped with stun guns, but they aren't 100% effective. Yeah, okay. Tell that to the dozens of people who have been killed. You know, is that what he means? They aren't effective because sometimes they kill the guy? I don't get it.
When you fire 46 rounds, only hit him 11 times?
I mean, yeah, right. These guys need to get to the range. They need some practice.
Well, I didn't see the video yet. I will watch it. But you can take this incident, you can take the incident that just happened in New York, where how did that unfold? There was a gunman somewhere. The gunman was killed. Nine other bystanders were shot. Turns out all the bystanders were shot by New York City police officers.
Yeah, that was the one that happened at the Empire State Building.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it is easy being a police officer. I have no idea what that's like. It can't be easy. But I would think we would need better performance than these two incidents here. We would have to expect better.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Okay, so what do you got, Jeremy?
Well, I like to bring this up because it instantly presses Rob's scoff button.
Well, let me warm it up.
You ready, Rob?
I'm ready to scoff away.
Okay. The headline is "The Unreported Racism in the 2012 Presidential Election." Rob, thought you might like that.
Ooh, it's getting there. Tell us about it.
When you read the article, it's that Romney doesn't have any black supporters.
And yeah, this is got 0% in one poll.
Yeah, that's what this is talking about.
Yeah, like a flat zero.
It was an NBC Wall Street Journal poll.
Didn't they just give a margin of error? Just throw two or three in there?
But it's this is an editorial piece, the way it reads anyway. I don't think it necessarily says that at the top, but yeah, just give it a look.
Fascinating.
Yeah. It's about I didn't hear you scoff. I'm a little bit disappointed.
I just liked that we got to say that he had 0% support amongst the whole demographic.
Is there nothing scoff-worthy in that, Rob?
No.
Okay.
No,
it's even below scoff-worthy. It's really bottomed out.
Okay. So, that's probably it, huh?
Yeah, I think it's...
That's about it.
All right. I want to thank our listeners, and we will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye now.